You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 6th of September 2014 on Monocle 24.
Political scandals, exciting episodes inside and outside of the Élysée. Soft furnishings and hard, sturdy design classics with some of the editors that make those vital publishing decisions. News, art direction, styling and more. The Stack goes French live from the City of Lights. This week we come to you live from Paris as The Stack takes in the print media landscape of France. We delve into the best houses and apartments with a creative who knows her sofas. Before that, we'll cross the border and go to Germany's media capital, Hamburg, to review one daily newspaper's very striking front cover.
We got a lot of very positive reactions there. The people said, oh, this was very surprising. It looked very, very nice.
Plus, we pay a visit to the Parisian kiosk to see what's drawing in the French readers.
What have they got there? They've got Spécial Vin, and they're talking all about wine because it is, of course, wine season. L'Express is another weekly with a pretty serious front cover as well.
All that and plenty more besides coming up today on The Stack here in Paris, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show with me, Tom Edwards. Yes, hello and welcome to this special episode of The Stack, brought to you live from Paris with me, Tom Edwards, at Maison Objet. And now, if you happen to be a homeware designer, there is only one place you're likely to want to be right now, and that's here. That's why we're here at the Monocle Shop and Cafe in Hall 8 of this huge selection of buildings, the big design industry gathering. Today I'm fortunate enough to be joined by two ladies who know the design publishing sector pretty much inside out. If there's one interiors magazine that all of the enthusiasts here in France need to snap up every month, then Elle Décoration it is. The market leader by far, the magazine's also something we always make sure to order in at Midori House, and I'm delighted to say we're joined by Elle Décoration France's art director, Marie Pietarinen. Marie, welcome to the show. Great to speak with you.
Thank you.
Before we meet our other guest, I just wanted to ask you about the responsibility for the covers. When you're looking at the covers for Elle Décoration, what's the process that you go through? Because it's quite a big responsibility, I guess.
Yes, because the cover is the really the thing that makes people choose a magazine and kiosk. We go through many images to start with. We have the idea of what we want, colors and themes, and we choose. We go through everything that we might have in our reportage, in our shootings, and we try, for every cover we must try at least 20 images with designs, with colors, with different titles, and we go through them with the team, with the editors and with also the journalists, because this way we can come out with this kind of inside conviction of what corresponds to us. So it's a big process like that. We try to look for spaces so that the reader could have this impression of have a space where they could evaluate in, sit down maybe, and they imagine themselves in it. So we we do less still lives, things like this. And we also want, of course, that all the details, all the objects and furniture correspond to what we think is really the best, the high quality thing. And something that has a strong impact.
Sure.
So that people can really see it from far. Something that really gives the idea of, okay, immediately I want this.
Perfect. Well, we'll talk a bit more about the current edition a little later. Let's also meet our other guest here on The Stack today, because we're joined by the deputy editor of France's most respected design industry journal, Intramuros magazine, which next year in 2015 will reach the grand old age of 30. Let's welcome Bénédicte Duhal to The Stack. Bénédicte, great to see you as well. Let's talk a little bit then maybe about Intramuros, the cover selection process. It's a little bit different because I think some people, design magazine enthusiasts, will be struck by the fact that it's often more kind of personality-driven. It's not necessarily beautiful objects. Sometimes it's beautiful people who you have on the cover.
Yes, this is a choice of Intramuros from the beginning. You know, we are 30 years old, and we decided to make the cover with the people who are behind the objects, behind the furniture, behind the factories, behind the societies. Most of them are, we choose designers. Hmm. And for us, they are the people who are... It is a little of a fault if design has become so people. Hmm. But for us, it was very important to show how people like Richard Sapper, Ingo Maurer, Philip Stark, of course, were people very engaged in their work, and to give them the place to explain their work, their choices, and things like that. So it's not... The difficulties perhaps now is that there are many, many designers, and we have to choose the best. But we have the conviction that the people we choose are will be very, not very famous, because the profession must be must stay a little modest, you know.
Sure.
But the last Sylvain Willens,
I was going to ask you about this, because there's a lovely story you told me about the sort of the immediate impact that being on your cover had for him.
Yes, for them it's important, because we are read by industrials, and they are looking at our selection to have an idea of what will be the perception, what will be the success of the people. And of course, he told us, for example, that as soon as the cover was published, he has some solicitation from external societies.
He knew he'd arrived when you put him on the cover. Marie, if I can go back to you, I said in the introduction about the sort of, I guess almost the kind of pressure on El Decoración. It's such a highly regarded, it's an institution, really. Do you find that is a brings a pressure to you as a creative person, because people have expectations, they have hopes for what they want to see on the magazine?
Well, I actually don't feel this pressure. I mean, maybe it's just because I try to not to think in that way. Mm-hmm. I just think that it's like, I mean, it does give us also the possibility to have like a huge selection of really beautiful places. And I mean, I don't feel it like that. We have a wonderful team that really, like, we work together, and we really, like, yeah, we don't have quarrels or things like this, and this means that we really, like, want to all together bring something best. I don't feel the pressure, though, but yes, of course, there is one.
It's in the back of your mind, perhaps.
We have to try to give us the best, and make it so that it comes out.
I think you're doing a pretty good job. We're going to go to a package in just a moment, but I wanted to just get a thought, Benedict, from you about being here at Maison Objet. What kind of sort of opportunity does being at Maison Objet offer for Intramuros? What kind of discussions do you have with people who you meet at your stand and by the cafe down there? What sort of opportunity does this give to you, do you think?
Ourselves, because we stay a little magazine, you know. We are not so famous. We are not so famous as El Deco, for example. We are very well known in the little market of design, but we are not a big magazine. So here we meet all the profession. We meet everybody. See the magazine, and it's for the fair also. The choice to have the validation of a magazine specialized in design, you know, the fair want to have this this image of a design fair, for now Design Aviv, for this sectors, for the all eight, and it's a deal together. We are supporting ourselves to make the profession more busy and more successful.
fantastic. We'll talk a little bit more about that place in the marketplace that you are kind of operating within a little later. Before we do that, though, let's cross the border. We're going to head to Germany, where last week the north of the country's largest and most read daily newspaper, the Hamburger Abendblatt, raised a few eyebrows with a very striking front cover. The page was composed entirely of illustration, no words whatsoever. Beside the paper's traditional Gothic style banner, David Pleasant, our producer, is here with me now. David, you spoke to somebody from Hamburger Abendblatt about this. Just before we hear from him, tell us who you caught up with.
Yeah, I spoke to Bernd Rutger, who's the managing director, who actually commissioned this front cover. It was really striking. It was actually something that Tyler Brulé put on my desk. He said, look at this cover, isn't it amazing? It's basically completely illustrated. There's not one word on it. Completely in illustration, complete graphic depiction of the stories of the day. Really brave move for a daily newspaper.
Well, let's hear what he had to say about that decision as we hear from him now.
Last year, we made a complete edition from Hamburger Abendblatt with art directors from several art agencies for the first time that the Art Directors Club Festival was held in Hamburg. So they translated the whole edition with their ideas.
And the result that we saw last week was a really fascinating cover. So it's basically, we should explain to listeners, it's all pictograms, it's all illustrations. There's no words. There's obviously the banner of the Hamburger Abendblatt across the top in traditional way, but then all the stories that you would feature on the front page are in fact pictures.
So the decision was, we just take the place which every news takes on the front page, on the real front page, and make this space the pictogram. So we have a story on the front page about the roof of a new concert hall in Hamburg, which is called the Elbphilharmonie, and they just fixed the roof of this concert hall. This is the first time there is no rain coming inside. It's just a complete new building. And the designers transported this story. They showed the Markant architecture and Holden umbrella above this. Another story is about a famous author writing every Saturday on the front page. He's writing about angry bicycle drivers. And they put his face and give him some glasses in the form of a bicycle.
Maybe let's talk about the reaction within Hamburg. How's it gone down? Have the Hamburgers liked this cover?
We don't know right now how this cover worked on the newsstands, but we got a lot of very positive reactions. The people said, oh, this was very surprising. It looked very nice. So we think about doing something like that again, maybe for a special event or special days or whatever.
That was the voice of Bernd Rotger from Hamburger Abendblatt in conversation with our own David Pleasant, who's sat alongside me here at Maison Objet, talking about his paper's pretty arresting front page from last week. I'm sure you can check out that archived images of that if you're canny on the internet. We're back at Maison Objet. I'm with David Pleasant. I'm also with Mary Pieterinen from El Deco, and I'm with Benedict Duhaud from Intramuros magazine. And Benedict, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the sort of the international dimension, not of Maison Objet this time, but of your magazine specifically, because we sometimes see magazines on the stack that appear in two languages. And I always wonder how much of a challenge that is for the editorial team to... well, it's just a hard trick to pull off, to do a magazine well in one language, let alone two. What kind of challenge is it, and what kind of opportunity do you think that it affords you, speaking literally to, I guess, even more people?
Yes, it was important for us to be bilingual because the profession is bilingual. You know, designers are working with Italian companies, a French designer is working with a Spanish one, or an English one is working with a Swedish one. So the international language is English, of course, and we had to be on this way. So people forget a little that we are bilingual, but that's the reason why also we are international. We are traveling a lot. We are following the fairs from Cologne to Milano to London to Singapore now with Maison et Objet and to Miami, to New York with the ICFF, things like that. And all designers are traveling with us. We saw everybody traveling in together from one point to another point. And it's a new way to live. Also, the mondialization. Designers can stay in a little country, a little town in the mountains. For example, Sylvain Willens is going perhaps to move to the Pyrenees. It will be for him easier to live, but he's also always traveling, going to see the furniture makers. So he has no, and the furniture makers are everywhere. They are also in China, they are in Slovenia, they are in Stockholm, things like that. They are always in the plane. This international side is very important.
Very important to you. I'd say it's certainly, I always imagine, a challenge, but I think you pull it off with elan, I would say. Marie, let me turn back to you, because on the stack, we like to sort of delve into a stack of magazines. And I know you also brought with you some of your, I don't know what to call them, maybe inspirations from the recent past, I should say. And I always like to ask, particularly sort of creative directors, where they got their magazine inspiration from. And I know you've got a couple of your old favourites, and I wondered if you could just sort of remind us about a couple of the ones you've got here. I know you have The Face and also this classic Rolling Stone. Tell us a little bit about how this came to influence you creatively.
So I'm a true child of the 90s in a way that it was like how I see it was the golden age of lifestyle and magazine in general. And I was at a time like I read a lot of Face, of course. I still like it. It's even my old ones. I think it was a magazine that used to melt things together in a really like a special way, and that's something that I still like, and I think that we can manage to do it in El Decoration as well. And also yes, I liked many of the American magazines for their way of putting interviews to a high value, doing large interviews. And yeah, well, I have this incredible Rolling Stone with Barack Obama on
It doesn't cover. Doesn't get much more high value than the president.
Yeah.
And just tell me, it's an interesting point you make about that melding of ideas and issues. And you were talking about the challenge for El Deco of how to do that. What is that process exactly? And what's your role in it on the sort of the creative side of the magazine? How do you go about blending those different facets?
Well, I think this is what the visual side is to do. It's our basic idea is to create an identity that permits to bring different views that are important in the editorial team. I mean, it's always important there are different journalists with different things that they bring in, and make it so that this kind of all blends into a El Decoration identity, and this identity partly comes of visual. So for me, important is to create something that is also at the time like trendy, that has languages of fashion or lifestyle or decoration or design, and at the time something that is warm in a way that a large public can read it and can feel that it's for them. That doesn't go too far, doesn't be too niche or
sure.
too...
Ben, if I can just come back to you very briefly, because we're almost out of time, sadly. I just wanted to ask in short, what's next for Intramuros? What should we look out for? Any exciting developments, or are you keeping them all secret?
Yes, we keep it secret. You know? No, it's not really secret, but we have many difficulties to choose. What we are going the next issue, it will be perhaps after the feeling we had on the fair here.
you know.
Fantastic. And, so, or maybe we've even played a small role in shaping how you think. Well, we'll be watching. We'll be watching very closely. We're very excited to see what's
next. But I can
tell
you that we're going to make the cover with a Chinese couple.
Oh, exciting stuff. Well, we'll be very excited to see that. Bénédicte Duhalde, deputy editor of Intramuros, thank you very much for joining us on the stack. And Marie Pieterinen from Elle Décoration, thank you as well. That was terrific stuff, David. But we've also been out and about in Paris. It's not just been about Maison Objet. We caught up with Tom Burgess Watson the other day. Maybe you can just quickly tell our listeners where we tracked him down.
Well, I thought it would be important to look at the kiosk, that very that iconic part of everyday French life still, popping into the kiosk, getting your daily newspaper, whichever political persuasion you might be of, whether it's Figaro or Le Monde or whatever else. So we popped into a kiosk on the Champs-Élysées because that happened to be one of the only ones still open at that late at night. And we of course, met our Paris correspondent, Tom Burgess Watson, where you, Tom, and Tom had a little chat.
Let's now. So we are here on the Champs-Élysées in one of the many newsstands, and of course I'm here with Tom Burgess Watson, our Monocle's Paris correspondent, who's talking me through his regular newsstand routine. Tom, looking through some of the titles here, we've got, of course, a plethora of periodicals, we've got the newspapers. Tell me about some of the newspapers, first of all. This one in particular has caught my eye.
Yeah, let's start with the dailies. You can see them all here in front of you. You've got the left-leaning Libération, the more centre-right Le Figaro there, Le Parisien, which is a sort of tabloidy newspaper. It gives you a flavour of what's going on in the French capital. Les Echos is the kind of Financial Times equivalent. And the one you've picked out is called Le Canard Enchaîné, and it's a sort of satirical weekly, in fact. It comes out every Wednesday, and they poke fun at the political establishment. And they're also very good at breaking stories, so quite often they'll have something for anyone else, and they're quite capable of unearthing a major political scandal, all very tongue-in-cheek, but sometimes with pretty hard-hitting and serious consequences.
And talking about the sort of political classes and how that dominates newsstand, it's quite a week, quite a moment, I guess, for stories about, you know, the lauded, venerated political classes perhaps not being treated with their usual deference because of some stories that are breaking in the popular magazines this week.
Yeah, over there is a copy of Paris Match, and it's, as you can see, got a picture of what was France's first lady on the front cover, Valérie Trivelière. She broke to them because she works for this magazine. The story that she was publishing a book, which came out on Thursday here in France, which has really rocked the political establishment, because it's a tell-all about her time with François Hollande, the president. 320 pages, none of it very flattering, spilling the beans on how he's a cold man, how he pokes fun at the poor. Imagine how that's going down in France. A socialist president who pokes fun at the poor, who when he came to power said he didn't like the rich. So people are asking, who does he like? Well, he's not very much liked here. He's one of the most unpopular presidents in French history. So Paris Match really going with that story. And Valérie Trivelière works for them, so little wonder they've got some exclusive insights there. Some other magazines that people are very keen to pick up on a weekly basis, Le Point. They're doing a special on the wines, actually, here in France, because it's wine harvesting time. It's a pretty good harvest, by all accounts. So that's their front story. What have they got there? They've got Spécial Vin, and they're talking all about wine because it is, of course, wine season. L'Express is another weekly with a pretty serious front cover as well. This is the new economy minister. He's called Emmanuel Macron, and they're calling this La Bombe Macron. He is the man everyone hopes will lead France out of the economic doldrums and address unemployment. And he's very young. He's actually younger than I am, which I was rather...
Heaven forbid, Tom. Heaven forbid.
Rather alarming. But he's credited with being a stylish, good-looking chap who knows what he's talking about. He comes from the business world, and everyone hopes he's going to do some pretty impressive stuff and save this country from economic ruin.
Well, I think what we should do, you mentioned the plentiful wine harvest. That's put me in mind of heading off to get a glass of wine or two, and maybe a bite to eat. But I think what we should do is maybe gather a few magazines, some of your favourite titles, and maybe take them with us.
Okay, so I've got here in my hand Paris Match, pretty known across the world. Let's pick up another couple of titles and then sit down and digest them. Shall we do that?
13 euros. C'est pour ça que je voulais les scanner pour vous donner le ticket détaillé.
Merci.
Alors, 13 euros, I give you a receipt. Voilà, voilà 50.
Merci, mais c'est pour lui.
Merci, thank you.
So we've repaired round the corner from the newsstand on the Champs-Élysées itself, and we're enjoying some nice evening repast, maybe a glass of wine or two, I won't be drawn on that. And Tom, you're going to guide us through some of the titles that you picked out. Now, we heard you sort of deep in conversation with the vendor there, and he seemed to have a view about this first one that you have before you.
Yeah, well, there's something quite nice about going to the newsstand in Paris is that when you talk to the vendor at the kiosk, you actually get the impression they know what they're talking about. They've actually read all the editions, and he actually seemed very well read indeed. He was talking to me about the front cover of Courrier International, which is a very good read indeed. It's a sort of summary of what the world press is saying, translated back into French. They're leading with this front cover story, Destination Jihad. And what they've got is this picture of a backpack with a map and a Kalashnikov next to it, a mobile phone, and a British passport poking out of the pocket on that backpack, implying that the jihadists who have gone out to fight in Iraq and Syria would appear, come from Britain. And yet inside, they've got this story, which they've taken out of La Repubblica, the Italian newspaper, which says that more than 700 jihadists who are engaged in fighting in Syria are originally from France, but it's a roughly double the number that have come from the UK, according to their own statistics. So it's interesting that they chose to go with a British passport. But what's good about this magazine is it gives you a flavour of what's being discussed in the world news.
Tom, it's interesting, you talk about the sort of the different perspectives on this travelling jihadist threat, different views on either side of the channel. Something that's caught your eye on this other title that which you picked up on the newsstand is a very much a domestic political issue, and quite a striking headline, a shocking headline in some ways. So tell us about this title and why this particular headline is maybe courting more headlines in and of itself.
This is an attempt by a fairly far right leaning publication called Valeur Actuelle, and it has on the front cover a picture of the new education minister, who is a woman, who is Muslim, and instead of giving her name, which I have to confess is long and complicated, they've simply called her L'Ayatollah, which has drawn a lot of criticism of this publication, Valeur Actuelle, because it is a rather judgmental comment. It's almost a rather ignorant way of describing a female education minister whose actual name is Najat Vallaud-Belkacem, which is, I confess, difficult to pronounce, but I don't think calling her L'Ayatollah is necessarily the most correct way of going about things. Well, another interesting thing I picked out of that magazine, they've got a sondage, I'm trying to remember the word in English, an opinion poll, there we are, an opinion poll they've got there on the first page, which says that if there was an election tomorrow, Sarkozy would win it with 30%. Marine Le Pen, who heads up the National Front, should get 27%. François Hollande would only get 16%, but he is, of course, the most unpopular president of modern French times. But then I think any opinion poll you read in this particular far-right publication, you'd have to take with a pinch of salt, because they would say Marine Le Pen was going to win, wouldn't they?
Of course. And well, let's kind of delve a little deeper into why exactly our friend President Hollande could be languishing so poorly. And Paris Match, which you mentioned while we were talking in the newsstand, dominated by this story about his, I don't know what to say, one of his many pre-conquests, it seems. Remind us, before we look at the specifics of this case, which is pretty extraordinary, about the sort of place that Paris Match occupies in the sort of periodicals firmament here in Paris.
Paris Match is a very photo-rich publication which has been a staple of international newsstands right across the world for decades, and for good reason. It's a very good read. It's, as I said, got fabulous photos, and it's always been very good on getting that balance between pictures and text. And they're leading this week with a sensational story, because Valérie Trivelière was the First Lady of France. She isn't any longer, because she's separated from her partner, François Hollande. But she works for this publication. She's got a column in Paris Match. And so it's perhaps unsurprising that she's given to them the scoop, which was some extracts from her memoirs, which are called Thank You for This Moment, translated into English. They've really caused some ripples in the Elysee Palace. She's really painted a rather gloomy picture of the man she spent 7 years with. But on a happier note, Paris Match is running some pictures of the secret ceremony of the wedding of Brad and Angelina. Brangelina's wedding, which happened here on French soil.
Well, Tom, thanks very much for guiding us through your pick of the Parisian newsstands for us, and I think we should leave you to your red wine, and I'll leave our David Pleasant to his creme brulee. He's only eaten about 10% of it.
Rest assured, though, listeners, David Pleasant did polish off that creme brulee. None of it went to waste. That brings us to the end of this very special edition 106 of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards, live at Maison et Objet here in Paris. A special thanks to my guests a little earlier, Marie Pieterinen and Benedict Duhalde. And, of course, many thanks to my producer, David Pleasant, our studio manager here in Paris, Sam Impey, and back on the desk in Blighty, a doff of the cap too, to Claire Urban. Any comments or questions? Get in touch with us. info@monocle.com is the email. We'll be back at the same time next week. For now, though, from here in Paris at Maison et Objet and me, Tom Edwards, that's all. Goodbye.